Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Ask not.
The Beatles.
Those are circuses on the air.
When the president does it,
sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you don't.
Tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Oh, we're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John has been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time, and the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
And now live from the Skyline Studios here at WGN Radio, Dave Schwann joins us in studio. How you doing, buddy?
Good, Dave. Good to see you as always.
Good to see you as well. Were you a big roller skater when you were a kid? Did you roller skate?
In a word, no.
No, you didn't.
I didn't.
All right.
After
watching that Honeymooners episode of Jackie Gleason, you know, getting on the skates and almost killing himself.
Very quick roller skate story.
Yes.
My cousin had an extra pair of skates once. We were visiting them. She gave me the skates. I'm sitting on the sidewalk. I put them on. I stood up, and I went right back down. And I couldn't ice skate to save my life either.
There was a Ralph Cramden, and there was a Fonz Happy Days episode where they were going roller skating and trying to keep up and look cool and do whatever.
Yeah. Can't we skate around here?
Oh, come on, Ralph. Come on. Really? We want to go in and skate in the rink. Come on.
Go in, there's plenty of room. I tell you, it's a real win. And a fire, Ralphie boy. Look, haven't we had enough of this skating? Can't we go home now?
No. You got to prove to Alice that you're young. Recapture your youth.
Recapture my youth? I keep this up, I'll lose my old age.
Look at this. Hey, mister, what's the matter?
First of all, I ain't a mister. And second of all, why don't you go off and play?
Why? He wants us to get out of here because he doesn't know how to skate. He doesn't know how to skate. Man.
1869, Isaac Hodgson received patent number 88,711 for the roller skate.
Oh, he got the roller skate.
He got it. And you know what? I used to go to the Axel Roller Rink on Harlem Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
It's over by what is now the AMC Theaters, and between that and the Maurice Linnell Cookie Factory that was on Harlem Avenue. And that was a place I went through high school. I think
they made the cookies there?
Uh-huh.
Maurice Linnell.
Oh, the smell.
Yeah.
When you would walk into the roller rink on a Saturday night, you would smell the cookies. Smell, you know, around there. So it was the Axel Roller Rink, and I remember all skate. I remember listening to Billy Squire. That's what we were listening to. It wasn't some little, you know, old-fashioned 1950s skating music. It was rock and roll by then.
Sure.
You know, you were listening to the contemporary music. And that was date night and going to hang out at the roller rink, and then we would go down the street and go get something to eat at one of the local restaurants.
That sounds like fun.
Before that, it was called The Hub, and that's where my mom used to go, and she used to tell me about that all the time. It was the supersized rolling rink of its time, and there was a giant Wurlitzer pipe organ in there, originally played by Leon Barry. The skating area was about 275 feet long and some 95 feet wide, and the floor was much larger if you include the area outside, because there was social, you know, where you can get on the little rubber mats or whatever and actually sit and talk. The skating has a set of styles of skating that were displayed on a lighted sign when the organ music would change tempos. So the little electronic sign would change. Couples only, waltz, foxtrot, And that was still up when I used to go there. You know, it was silly.
Did you ever hear the organ?
They play it. I don't think I've ever heard the organ. It was just music.
Because those organs will really rattle the rafters.
The rink was open every night and had matinees Saturday and Sunday. Weekends always found huge crowds, big snack bar. The only access to the rink area was through a large opening in the west end of the lobby. Again, it changed to the Axel in 74 and closed on October of 1985. But that's the big classic one. Here, there's a bunch of roller skating rinks that I was surprised is still open in the city.
In the city, yes.
Yeah, we're going, Dave.
Okay, there's another place where we can do the show.
The Fleetwood on your ass, we're going to probably do that show after you fall.
I'll just stay seated, thank you. I'll watch you guys.
Okay, that's fair. The Fleetwood Roller Skating Rink in Summit on Archer Avenue is still open. The Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Park and Family Entertainment Center on 76th Street in Chicago has a roller rink in it. Lombard still has one of the older ones, roller rink, on 22nd Street. Think about this. You can take a weekly class, $9. Otherwise, it's $7 or $8 admission, $4 for skate rental.
Wow.
You can't get any more cost-effective for family entertainment than that. The Coach Light Roller Skating Center is also still open. The Glenwood Roller Rink in Glenwood, Illinois. Just for Fun Roller Rink in Mundelein. The Aurora Skate Center on Montgomery Road. Funway in Batavia. Extreme Wheels Roller Skating and Family Fun Center in Crystal Lake. And Bella's Skate on Grand in Fox Lake. So some of these little more rural
areas.
There
are a lot of them out there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's great.
When are we going, Dave?
Yeah, what happened to our drive-in movie theaters?
Well, you know what? Let me tell you.
I know you're big on that.
They announced a couple weeks ago, Scott Dean, who owns the McHenry Outdoor Theater. The big deal with these theaters is that, just like what happened to the Cascade in West Chicago, what happened to Kittyland in Melrose Park, somebody owned the land and somebody owned the park, and the land was always sold from underneath them.
And there was nothing they could do.
Scott just bought the land.
Ah.
It's going no place. So we'll talk about drive-ins as we get closer to the summer. 1889, the first dishwashing machine was marketed here in Chicago.
I can only imagine the mechanics.
Rent a couple kids
that.
To come into the house and in a box and wash the dishes. Inspired by Joel Houghton's 1850 machine that simply splashed water on dishes, Josephine Cochran decided to invent something more efficient for dishwashing. In 1886, she invented the first practical dishwashing machine that was a hand-operated mechanical machine.
That's where you got your power.
Wire compartments held dishes, which were sprayed by hot, soapy water. The wheel was turned by using a hand crank on the outside of the machine. Though it worked only in hotels and large restaurants, bought the dishwashers, and it wasn't until the 1950s that the actual dishwasher was sold to the public.
Sure, no one could afford them.
Don't rinse those dishes. Well, there's simply no need to. Not when you have this amazing new Westinghouse dishwasher. You see, it's so much more thorough than other dishwashers that there's no pre-rinsing. Why, you'll be out of the kitchen in just 2 minutes when you own this dishwasher. It really is remarkable. Now, here's what you do. You just scrape your food waste right off your plates and then put your dishes over here. And you can use this surface as a loading surface at any time because, look, the wash well rolls right out. And the Westinghouse dishwasher is so easy to load, too. And it holds more dishes and pots and pans than any other dishwasher made today. It washes them cleaner, too, because of greater efficiency, and it dries them all automatically. The Westinghouse dishwasher costs less to install, too, and it comes in these models. This cabinet model, this under-the-counter model, and this new portable model that requires no installation and that your dealer will be glad to let you try before you buy. You know, I'll bet you're wondering what happened to those food scraps that I scraped into the sink here. Well, they went right down into this Westinghouse food waste disposer that you can either have with this model or you can have installed in your present sink. And it's wonderfully handy. And let me tell you, you're really going to love owning this Westinghouse dishwasher because it makes every night your night off.
Now, Cochran went on to produce dishwashers with her own company, a company that later became KitchenAid.
Ah, okay.
Look at that.
We had a KitchenAid dishwasher when I was growing up.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. I helped my dad put it in. Well, actually, I stood by and watched him put it in.
Mine is a KitchenAid, and it is still a very top-tier brand from our friends at Apt. All right, 1891, the Wrigley Company is founded in Chicago. originally selling products such as soap and baking powder.
Soap and not gum yet.
1892, William Wrigley Jr., the company's founder, began packaging chewing gum with each can of baking powder. The gum eventually became more popular than the baking powder itself, and the Wrigleys reoriented the company to produce the popular chewing gum.
And I'm looking at the Wrigley building.
Yes.
As we speak.
There it is, right there. Here is a classic commercial. How about the Doubleman twins? Let's take a listen.
Double dating, double jumping, double creature in a double feature. But the single most favorite double in the world is double good, double good, double mint gum.
Double your pleasure with double mint gum. Double good, double fresh, double delicious.
For the single most
There's no single gum like it.
You remember that spot?
Oh, yeah.
Double mint gum, of course.
Yeah.
1938, the Baseball Hall of Fame opened in Cooperstown, New York.
Yay!
A favorite place I know of yours, Dave.
Yep. In fact, we were there. Well, it's been, at least 7 or 8 years now. But we got there very late in the afternoon. In fact, they were just about ready to close, and I ran in, and there was a very nice lady at the entrance, and she said, "We are going to close," but she said, "Did you just want to go in
and take a
look
peek
at the hall?" And
yeah.
She said, did you have any player in mind? I said, "Ernie Banks." She took me right to his plaque. I took the picture, and I said to my dad, "We have to come back tomorrow. I know we have to go somewhere else, but let's make time
to do this,
to do it." And I, to this day, I tell everybody there is something for everyone.
I think I went there first in 1993 or 94. I was living in upstate New York. So it was still a bit of a drive to come back down to Cooperstown.
New York's a very big state.
It's a very big state. It was hours to get there. But I mean, it's just such a glorious place.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. 1955, Richard J. Daley was elected mayor of Chicago. He was an American politician who was the mayor for 21 years, chairman of the Cook County Democratic Central Committee for 23, holding both positions until his death in office in 1976.
I remember when he passed away, was just coming home from college for Christmas break, and I was out with some friends. And walked into the house, and my mom was in the kitchen, and the first thing she said to me was that Mayor Daley died.
That's a big deal, because, I mean, he was the preeminent mayor, really, of the 20th century, as far as any big city, in terms of
running things.
Daley was Chicago's third mayor, Chicago mayor in a row from a working-class, heavily Irish-American Bridgeport neighborhood on Chicago's south side.
Jimmy Carter had just been elected president. He was president-elect and came to the funeral. And they didn't allow cameras inside the church for the funeral mass, Dave. But it was cold that day. Nonetheless, there were many, many people still standing outside that church.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
1980, the Chicago, Rock Island, and Pacific Railroad operates its final train after being ordered to liquidate its assets due to bankruptcy and debt owed to creditors.
There was an old
Those are
song.
Big names.
Yeah, there was an old song. The Rock Island Line is a mighty fine line.
Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. Well, if you ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket at the station for the Rock Island Line. Cloudy in the west and it looked like rain. Round the curve, come a passenger train. Northbound train on the southbound track. She's all right, I'll even, but he won't be back. Well, the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. Well, if you ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket, that's your station for the Rock Island Line.
There it is, right there. A classic. But, I mean, you think about the train companies of the day. I mean, you know, Soo Line. My aunt worked for Soo Line, and so did my grandfather, for decades.
Yep.
And
what about the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe?
Well, you remember these just as you sit watching the trains go by and all the logos. I mean, it's just such a piece of Americana, right?
That's vanished.
Another historical moment in time, Dave. 1982, Joni Loves Chachi premieres. You know, when it premiered, for about 4 weeks, and it was like on after Happy Days. It was like number one, number two. Like it was big.
Yeah.
And then once they moved it to a different time slot,
then it fell
after
off.
A year. It was gone.
It was only on one season. Gone.
Barely one season before they came back. 2003, one of my favorite stories. In the middle of the night, on March 30th, 2003, Mayor Daley, you want to say really? Mayor Daley ordered city bulldozers.
When you said the middle of the night, I knew where you were going.
That's when I knew he really had balls. Mayor Daley ordered city bulldozers to carve a huge X onto the runway of Meigs Field. Flights ready to land that morning had to divert to another airport, and the FAA fined the city $33,000 for lack of notice. Let's take a little listen to the newscast of that day.
Well, Perlner's let this business jet get by us. This guy is probably coming into town to spend $3 or $4 million. And you'll notice this insignificant airport that's not at all important is lined with corporate airplanes. And I'll tell you something else. The acting aviation commissioner said, it's only another 10 minutes by car from here to Midway. I'd love to drive him on that ride, because I don't think you can do it. And I don't care whether you're talking about 9 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock at night, or any time in between. It just ain't going to happen. That's foolish.
We routinely come in here, and it's a very convenient facility, and our customers go right downtown. It's a very short drive.
Yeah, he had some schnutzkies there to go ahead and just carve and a big X there.
Then Governor Jim Edgar, fought very hard to keep the airport open.
Yeah.
He thought it was a unique thing for the city. And I remember seeing a pilot who had a private plane on the news the following night who was unable to take off.
But and I knew, it wasn't going to reopen.
No. It wasn't going to reopen.
It was over.
It was
over.
Done.
Dave, have a great week.
You too, Dave. Thanks.